Hey, y'all, I got a question for you. What's a piece of gear that you maybe have unintentionally overlooked in your rig throughout the years? Well, for me, it's always been guitar cables. I figured, it just goes from the guitar to the amplifier or the guitar to the pedal board to the amp, and if one breaks, whatever, I'll just go buy another one. No big deal. Thanks to the fine folks at Runway Audio, though, I have finally seen the light. Runway Audio is based in Nashville, Tennessee, which is awesome for me because that's right down the road. But it's awesome for you as well because Runway has the best cable on the market. And what makes it the best, you ask? Well, it has the lowest capacitance of any cable on the market right now, at 20 picofarads per foot. And pretty much all that capacitance is the ability to store an electrical charge. The lower the capacitance is, the less tone that it sucks from your cable from your guitar on the way to your amplifier. So if you're in the market for anything cable-related, whether it's instrument cables, patch cables, XLR cables, speaker cables, power cables, you name it, Runway Audio has got you covered. And if you go down to my link tree, click the link for Runway Audio, any purchasing you will do, I will get a little bit of a kickback from that, which is always appreciated. So check out all the awesome stuff that Runway Audio is doing and pick something up to get the best tone possible. This episode today is brought to you by Stringjoy Guitar Strings, the finest strings on the market. For me, it has been the Orbiters that have been my absolute go-to ever since they have come out, and that's their coated electric strings. But if the coated thing's not your thing, totally get it. The Signatures and the Broadways in their electric line, top-notch quality. For acoustic guitars, they have their Naturals and their Brights, along with the Foxwoods, which are their coated Fosper Bronze. For all you bassists out there, too, they have the Signatures and the Rangers. Full disclosure, the link down below is my affiliate link, so if you would like to check out Stringjoy, click that link down below. Not only will you be getting the finest guitar strings on the market, but you'll also be helping out this podcast, which I greatly appreciate. So, head on over to Stringjoy today. I'm not even close to the tip of the iceberg of all the awesome things that Stringjoy does, so click the link down below and check them out for yourself. Welcome back to Man the Helm Podcast. Mike is back from a little hiatus because we had a guest appearance, Mr. Brian Wampler. And speaking of Brian Wampler, you got a new pedal. Let's talk about it.
Well, newly bought, not necessarily new, but it just got to Dracars.
Oh, yeah.
Because I even said it in a message. I was like, this is quite literally the clone of distortion pedals. I was like, there's no other... I've probably played 50, 60 distortion pedals. I've owned quite a few, and I just never cared about them, never really liked them. So I was like, got to play yours, was so in love with it. Whenever you asked for it back, what was it, a couple weeks ago, I was like, I guess.
When you're done with what you're doing, can I have it back, please? Yeah.
I was like, but it needs to be on this board.
Well, dude, I will say, man, like that was the first. So when I moved here, I got here in 2016. Yeah. So I got here in 2016 and I was starting to kind of play with some bands around here. And the bands that I was starting to play with were playing more like heavier alternative rock, metal sort of things. And the gear that I had at the time, nothing really fit the bill. And dude, I bought that pedal, and I'm not even kidding. I saw the Dracars, I saw the EVH 5150 pedal, and I want to say an MXR or something or other. Not that stupid full bore metal, but there's another one that's one of their higher gain things. And I plugged all of them in, and I was just like, no, absolutely not these two. The Dracars is where it's at.
Yeah.
And it's great too because that's what made me start with Wampler. It like love it. Everything I've put out has been great, but that one in particular is top
freaking notch.
Well, I mean, I got that new H-string.
Yep.
A nice little white little Schecter with a massive fretboard and massive strings. And that with the Tidy Whitey and the Vertex thing is perfect. Of course, I had to throw two noise gates on it because,
well,
you know, high gain.
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of what I liked about it, though. Like, that's the thing with this pedal. It's high gain, but it's so usable.
Yeah.
High gain.
Well, the last thing I want to listen to is a chainsaw that is currently in a blender that is also getting cut over by a lawnmower and wanting my ears to die.
Yeah. Nothing like hitting that ice pick straight to the eardrum, you know, when you click that thing.
I was ready, you know, if I'm ready to go full Beethoven, it's never a good day.
Well, and you've played with guys like that, and I have too, that, you know, I don't want to say they don't care about tone. Maybe they just don't know or don't dive as deep into their gear as most guitar players, I think, should. Because knowing your gear and knowing how to use it is, like, a lot of the battle when you're playing with bands, especially.
Well, especially if you're looking for certain sounds.
Yeah.
Especially, like, because for me, like, you know, doing covers and stuff like that, it's, to me, it's more important to get as close as I can to the original track.
Absolutely.
Especially if it's a well-known cover.
Yeah.
Now, if we're changing it, it is what it is. But if it's, I want it as 100%.
If you're playing, if you go to a bar here in this area and you start playing Pride and Joy, it better be right on the money.
Yeah.
You know, because everybody knows that song. Or if you start playing even some more like esoteric stuff, like to the normal listener, you know, even if you started playing like Hendrix, you know, obviously when I say esoteric, I'm speaking to people that aren't guitar players. But yeah, like it's got to be spot on because everyone has heard those songs before.
And that's what I always warn, especially new players, is do not bite off more than you can chew.
Sure.
Because I've had bands, like a band recently that wants to play Beat It.
Yeah.
But no one can play that solo.
Yeah.
And I was like, you can't fake it.
No,
it's
no,
either
no.
It's either is or it isn't. And if it's if it isn't, then don't even try it, because you can end an entire night in one fail swoop where everyone who was interested is disinterested.
Dude, I cannot tell you how many times there are some songs that I've used to play with bands and stuff like that where, yeah, you play the first four bars of the solo and then you can have some artistic liberty there because nobody really remembers that solo. It's a song everybody kind of knows, but it's not anything like...
Well, I mean, that's where, like, you know, especially like Hendrix stuff.
Sure, there's some artistic liberty right there that you can take, right? Or if you're playing like some pop song that you maybe turn into a rock song, there's no solo in that. So if you want to take a solo, that's all you. That's just some crowd work, you know, making some, you know, girls go woo at that point. That's all that is.
More like guys. Guys that go woo.
Yeah, yeah. Mostly guys.
Mostly
yeah.
guys.
But hey, not knocking it. It's not for me. Anyway, but that's kind of what I loved about, to kind of circle back around to the Dracaris, is when I got it and I put it on the board, I was like, oh dude, this thing is so much more than just like a one trick pony. You know, like
yeah.
I can dial this thing in from super high gain, you know, modern metal. And if I dial it back, like it even sounds good on like some of the softer alt stuff or some of the classic rock stuff as well.
Well, I was using it for Black Sabbath covers.
Right, dude. That mid sweep on the EQ, especially for like the Black Sabbath style of like doomy metal.
Yeah.
Dude, so freaking good. So yeah, if anybody at Wampler happens to listen to this, we like your stuff. Send us free stuff. Appreciate it. Anyway. Preferably more Dracarises, because apparently those are the future Quans. So
yeah, you know, it. Well, I mean, and you know, I made that almost in jest,
yeah,
just because.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm serious when I say that it is a monster of a pedal.
Well, I think
it's worth every penny, in my opinion. I bought it brand new. I was like, I was like, I want all the little goodies that come with it because it's one of those pedals. Because I'm a huge save the box, save the goodies guy. I literally have three boxes at my house of just boxes of pedals.
Boxes and boxes.
And like all the different stickers and stuff that come with it.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like for pedals I don't care about, half the time I'll just either go and sell them or go take them and I'll just toss the box and I'm just like, whatever, I don't even care. And it's like, you know, I like to have little mementos. I mean, even when getting that H string trade in that Epiphone, you know, I had a hard time with it, but at the same time, the guy that wanted it was definitely going to use it.
Sure.
And that guitar has been sitting as a backup to a backup. And I was like, you know, I'd rather this thing get played. And for, you know, I paid $340 for that guitar. Yeah. And that thing was perfect. Exactly what I needed.
I was about to say, and the thing is in this area too, with like the metal community, if you really want to get rid of that 8-string, you are not going to have an issue getting rid of that 8-string.
No.
There's plenty of those young kids that are doing the Tim Henson thing or the like super hardcore chuggy stuff still. So.
Yeah, and the thing with like all these different, I guess, newer guitar players, you know, I'm having a hard time kind of viewing them as guitar heroes. It's not like it's not anything to do with their playing, but as far as like the mystique of their playing, I guess because it's so normalized now of all these insane different guitar players, you know, it's just like, you know who Tim Henson is, you know who Tozen Abasi is, you know who, you know, any of the bands that they're in, half the time people can't even tell you the band name. They can tell you the guitar player because they know it.
Well, and I think that's partly to do with because they're not our generation's guitar hero.
Yeah, they're the next generation's
guitar hero. You know what I mean? Like my kids, I've got two girls that are, you know, just got into the double digits pretty much. If they start playing music, their guitar heroes not only are going to be the typical guitar heroes, that the Eddie Van Halens and the Hendrix and the Stevie Ray Vaughns, like that, those are always going to be like the pinnacle. I don't care if you're a guitar player, you listen to them. You might not like it as much as the next person, but you understand the importance of that role. But, you know, for instance, like guys that I never thought of as quote unquote guitar heroes, the Brad Paisleys, the John Mayers, the lesser known people, you know, like Andy Wood, stuff like that. These people still exist, but I think it's because, like you said, we don't have that mystique of them from the past. That's why we don't have the same regard for that sort of thing. That makes sense.
Well, it's like I saw a video last night by Music Is When,
mm-hmm.
and it was talking about the song Crossroads.
Yep.
Originally by Robert Johnson,
mm-hmm.
and covered extensively by Eric Clapton.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's also been covered by, you know, 10,000 other people.
Right,
easy.
Right.
And it's like, you know, how is a song that is literally three chords?
Yeah.
It's like an A7, D7, and E7 or something like that. It's literally just 1-4-5, call it a day, get out of here.
You know what? Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'll let you finish.
But it's just interesting that, you know, I've seen more guitar heroes get popular off of covers of music than I do on their own music.
Yeah, sure. So the Robert Johnson thing, the reason why I think that is because, you know, obvious answer, the devil. Anyway, sell the soul to the devil. That's why I think that's why, you know, he's so popular or whatever. The thing I think with the covers thing, and I'm totally joking about that. If you guys are offended by the devil, I'm sorry. But
I mean, that's literally what he's talking about.
No, 100% is
and that's
know,
the whole myth. Right. That he met the devil at the crossroads down in Mississippi.
Yeah. But I think with the cover thing these days, honestly, I think that's the best way if you want to get out as quickly as possible is come up with a rendition of a very popular song that everybody already knows. Because, you know, just as well as I do, you know, you go to, you know, you get your band camp together or you start publishing stuff, you know, you'll have your friends listen to it, maybe. Your mom and dad might, you know, you'll be looking at your Spotify numbers or whatever streaming service you're on and looking at the plays, and you're going to be in the single digits for quite a while. You know, so I get why, you know, people are getting discovered off covers. The bad thing with that is it's kind of like those people that have like one hit wonders.
Well, it's a double-edged sword.
Right.
If you're known for that, that's what people expect from you.
Right. You know, and it's like, funny story, like we opened up for Tool a long time ago. Or not Tool, good God.
But psh.
Yeah, inside joke. We might get into that. Anyway, we opened up for Trapped.
Well, they're pretty much the same band.
Yeah, essentially, right? No, but it was so funny because I was listening to them, and like they didn't sound bad. They played well. They sounded great. I didn't know that they had enough songs to fill up a set just because I had that, you know, once again, that one-hit wonder preconceived notion bias in my head of that that's what that band is. Obviously, they put out multiple albums. They have a plethora of stuff on their catalog. Ask anybody what any other song besides Headstrong is. You know what I mean? They're not going to know. Unless you are that one diehard Trap fan that can name off, like, their whole discography.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's, you know, like, I remember, I think it was 2007, 2000, no, 2009.
Mm-hmm.
I went and saw Saving Abel.
Okay, yeah.
Well, I went to go see Avenged Sevenfold, but Saving Abel was with them.
Sure.
For some reason. But that was when they first got big off of Addicted.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And when I tell you that that was probably the most embarrassing set
really?
I have ever seen from a band, they played it three times. They played it at the beginning. They played it just before the last song. And they literally, like, they had to pause for time, so they just started playing it again. I was like, you literally are a in my eyes, professional musicians, professional band, in some regards at least, and you literally played the same song three times. By the third one, you could hear just people talking. You couldn't even hear the band half, like, almost at all. Because it was just embarrassing. You know, and I understand that they had a very... They were not expecting to have a longer set.
Sure.
Because apparently, so just based off what I know of at the time, originally it was like a 30-minute set and it got bumped, or it was a 25-minute set and then it got bumped to 30. And then Bullet for My Valentine was next. But they did not, they were still trying to get their stuff where it needed to be.
Mm.
And so they paused for time, but instead of letting the band, like, all right, thanks, and, like, play some, like, house music for, like, 5 minutes,
mm-hmm.
they were just like, just do something. And they all looked at each other, and they were like, well, did you like those two previous songs? We're about to do them again. Which, I mean, did the job, but it also looked... hilarious.
You like you said, you're professional musicians and you just looked extremely unprofessional.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. It's kind of funny when I think about this. I like to have it just in every aspect of my life. I like to have a backup for a backup. When I was in the military, we had the PACE plan of, you know, primary, alternate, you know, contingent, emergency, right? I have that built into, like, every aspect of my life, and especially on guitar, man, or playing with a band. Like, you don't know what's going to happen. you don't know if you're going to get the lights flashed at you, and then you look over and you see the sound guy and he's all like, 2 minutes. It's like, well, fuck, what do we do now?
Well, it's not only that, but it's like, even when we did that gig at the VFW, I had 2 amps, 4 guitars, and a backup pedal board.
Yep.
Because I've had amps catch on fire. I've had amps blow up. I've had guitars that every string seemed like it wanted to pop off at any given moment. I've had shorts. I've had power issues. I've had cables break. So I bring double, triple everything. And it's like, does it look ridiculous? Me bringing 2 amps, 4 guitars, an extra pedal board, all this stuff. It's like, yes, but I've been there. I've done that. I know how this works.
Yeah. Well, what would be a worse scenario? People looking at you like you're crazy for 5 minutes while you're bringing your stuff in, or you getting halfway through an hour and a half set and not having an amp anymore?
Yeah, or going direct into the board.
Right. Right. Like that's the thing. I never did the extreme thing with the amps, mostly because I never had 2 amplifiers to lug around. But with the guitars especially, man, like, you know, you have no clue. Like, I knock on wood, haven't really broken strings live. I don't break strings most of the time anyway.
I have.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But I mean, that comes down to, I think, the way that I play, how hard I'm attacking. You know, I'm a relatively light, you know, person with my left hand on the fretting hand, and, you know, not very aggressive with the right hand either. But neither here nor there. I have broken strings, but just not in a live scenario, thank God. But if I did, it would have been too easy. I had the other guitar right behind me. It would have been too easy, mid-song, click a tuner, make sure I kill the noise, unplug that guitar real quick, throw that thing in the rack, pick the other one up, boom, get back to the song.
Yeah.
It would have been a 15-second change where, yeah, it looked awkward, but, you know, I would never want to be put in that situation. And if I was in a situation where I had a hit song, this is probably would be the downfall of my life, though, because what I would be trying to do is constantly, constantly improve. Now, saying that I'm going to get another hit song, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, if my job now is to be a guitar player, a singer-songwriter in a professional band, that's what my focus is when I'm not doing the job.
Well, it's like Linkin Park came out with their first album. Their first album crushed it.
Yeah.
Probably the best first album that you could have ever had.
I'd agree.
And they had to follow that up with, I think they've done 4 more albums since then. I think 5 in total, if I remember correctly. But they had to pump out 4 more albums or the next album. Just imagine doing the next album when the first album crushed it.
Yeah, you have nowhere to go but down.
You have nowhere to go but down. There is no more next level up. It is straight down. And it doesn't matter what you do, it's going to end up not being as successful.
Well,
they literally have their first 2 albums are 1 and 2 all time. For their discography. You know what 3 and 4 are?
What's that?
The re-release of 1 and 2.
Oh, okay. Well.
So it's like, you know, their most successful things that they did in the late 2000s, early 2010s, is the songs for Transformer.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, at that point, too, like, I mean, you got to think. So I've had people that I've talked to about that particular era of that, and you know, you want to call it whatever, a sellout or, you know, whatever they're saying they're doing. So you went from releasing, like you said, probably one of the best ever first albums of the modern era, at least music-wise, in my opinion, to that sophomore album, which was still good. The sophomore album for any band always is usually...
Well, it's either a step down or it's a step up, but it's typically a step
down. It's typically a step down. But then you have somebody, for instance, like Michael Bay, that's making a movie and his people are hitting you up to write music that you're going to get a pretty decent paycheck for, I don't care who you are, you're taking that deal 10 out of 10 times.
Well, it's like, because I mean, thinking the opposite, like Avenged Sevenfold, what was it, Sound or something of the Seventh Trumpet or whatever it was, that first album.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then you have Waking the Fallen. Mm-hmm. Waking the Fallen is a way better album than their first album. But City of Evil was right after that, which crushed it.
Yeah, yeah.
Their self-titled album did pretty good. Not as good as City of Evil, but it still was pretty solid. And then you start getting into Nightmare, and it's like, oh, okay. And then you have pretty much an entire Metallica album that they piece together. So it's just so weird. I don't even remember the name of it.
Yeah, well.
But it's like, you know, and then they have the stage, and they keep innovating. And it's, you're going to lose fans, of course.
Sure.
Because people are going to be like, well, this is the best album. It's the only album that I care about. Or so on and so forth. And I've followed Avenged Sevenfold for a long time now. But eventually you start getting into, sometimes your innovation is hurting you more than it's producing a good album.
Yeah.
Because they did one song that I've heard on the radio. I think it's like Nobody.
Oh, yeah. Because
they repeat it like 700 times. And I was like, I didn't know the Migos were in Avenged Sevenfold. I was like, what is going on?
Dude. And see, that's the thing. And there's so many things behind closed doors that people don't realize. Like, an album can, like, you could have the best 10 songs that any person has ever heard on the fucking face of the earth. And if you have a shit producer,
it's going to be bad.
It's going to be bad. You know what I mean? And that's just one of the, like, multifaceted, like, just layer upon layer of possible contingency that could go wrong in that sort of environment, you know? And especially with, like you said, that sophomore album for most bands, it's like, well, I think we've talked about this before. That first album, you know, you're on, maybe you're doing some regional tours. You're working, you're kind of like an open micer at that point, like a comedian. You're working out jokes, so you're finding where what hits, you're finding out what people like. So when you do release that special or that album, all your stuff just kills.
Well, I mean, you have as much time as you need for a first album.
Yeah, second album is just like, hey. You guys just got off the road?
You got off the road. You have 4 months. We need an album.
We need another 12 songs.
We need another 12 songs. I know you haven't had time. You don't even know what your kids look like anymore, but chop chop.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, and it's like, I've talked to people about those sophomore albums and those next albums or whatever, or like if there's an issue with like one of the band members where they have some crazy circumstance happen in their life and the band takes a hiatus for 6 months, it's like, okay, you're looking at like, so if you were to take a break from your job right now, whatever your job may be, for 6 months, and you get thrown back in the mix after that 6 months, you think you're going to be like right back on your game the where you were at the... Absolutely not, you know?
You know, and what that makes me think of is like Pantera.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had like, I think it was Power Metal.
Yeah.
They had like 2-3 albums whenever they first formed. They were trying to do the whole hair metal thing.
Yeah, glam rock, glam metal, yeah. Whatever. Yeah, yeah.
And then they come out with Cowboys from Hell. Moves the needle. Then they come out with, I'm pretty sure it's Vulgar Display of Power.
You might be right. I don't know off the top of my head.
I'm pretty sure it's Vulgar Display of Power. And then it's Far Beyond Driven.
Mm-hmm.
Great Southern Trendkill. And then Reinventing the Steel,
mm-hmm.
which was their last album.
Yeah, yeah.
So first album, everything is pretty much done when they bring Phil Anselmo in. Things got changed. Things got improved. Pump it out. Vulgar Display of Power, everyone's working on it.
Yeah.
Far Beyond Driven, Phil Anselmo starts spending more time in New Orleans than he does in Texas, where they're writing everything. Great Southern Trendkill, literally Phil Anselmo's not in the building at all. They write it out. He's doing his own stuff. And then Reinventing the Steel, everyone hates each other. No one wants to be around each other. They pump out an album just to say, yeah. And it shows, because other than possibly one song on, or one or two songs on an entire album, which are some of the songs were older. They had done them a long time ago and they just threw it on there to fill out an album. And it's like, you know, any type of drama like that where you have a member that doesn't, that clearly is not in a good place or clearly is done. And it's also kind of hard when you think about, you know, two of the guys are brothers.
Yeah.
So they're going to be a little bit more either at odds or bonded on certain issues.
Absolutely.
So it's like, you know, finding like-minded personalities with your work ethic, your commitment, your innovation, and, you know, how well you can play, how well that you're willing to make changes that you may not like at first, but end up making it all the way better.
Yeah.
It's difficult to find. It's a difficult combination of personality traits that you're looking for members. And if you don't have like-minded members, it doesn't matter what songs you want to write.
Well, that, and if you don't only need the like-minded members, you need the people that are willing to compromise.
Well, I'm not saying you need all those skills.
No,
but
you
need a shade of degree of some of those skills.
Yeah. Like for instance, with you and me writing stuff, and you know what I mean? Like, you and I don't take stuff personally if we say, hey, I don't feel like this is going to work.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not like we're saying, you're not coming up like, Jake, that riff fucking sucks. You know? You're just like, hey, this kind of feels weird. Can we try something? Like, and dude, that's the biggest thing. Try something else. If that trying something else doesn't work, guess what? You still have the old riff that is still written that you can still use. You know? And that's the biggest thing. Like, this ego amongst, especially, and I've noticed it more with the less experienced musicians, you know, and I don't mean kids. I mean anybody that it just doesn't have experience playing with bands. Those are the people, man, that just, their ego is just like, well, I wrote this song. It's like, cool, man, and it's not bad, but I'm trying to help you make it better in my eyes as well. Let's try to find some middle ground here to make it work for everybody.
It's like, you know, if I was, what's his name? Randy Elfman, is that it?
I'm not.
The guy who did all the, like, Nightmare Before Christmas and stuff like that.
Composer. Yeah.
Well, imagine Randy Elfman getting substituted for John Williams for Nightmare Before Christmas.
Right.
It's like, you know, would it have worked? Probably.
He'd have made something work.
But, you know, there's only so many times I can listen to French horns before I want to gouge my eyes out.
It's a very unappealing instrument.
It's not so much an unappealing instrument, but
I don't like
listen to every John Williams score. And it is literally French horn dominant the entire time. And I'm just like, you know, there's other brass instruments in the back that could use, you know.
I just don't like the way it looks.
Yeah,
it freaks me out.
The giant circle.
Yeah, I don't like it.
The circle of tubing.
It scares me, and then I see people with their hands in it, and I'm just like, I don't like this.
Well, that's a good place to hide snacks.
I'm sure it is. You know what I mean? I was a trumpet player, at least. You know what I mean? Like,
I was the opposite end.
Right.
The tuba player.
Yeah. Well, but that's the thing. Like, kind of to circle back to, you know, the whole ego thing, man. I just don't understand. I've never been like that, so I guess I'm biased because I've never understood why people get so upset about trivial shit like that. You know what I mean? Like, it's never a personal thing. Sometimes it is.
Sometimes it is.
Sometimes you have to be like that, but those times are few and far between.
Well, it's like, for me, I don't want to sit there and have to argue about certain things.
Right.
Like, if it's good, or it can be better, like, let's work on making it better.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, just because you wrote it doesn't mean your shit don't stink. So absolutely. Don't be surprised, you know, especially, and this is what I like to do. If I write something, I bring it and I go, hey, I wrote this and I play it. And it's either, well, that's cool, but, or that was cool. Like, what's the rest of the context? It's never asking that question is necessary if you're trying to write a song with the riff or the chords or however you're doing it. And if you can't put the entire part, the most important part that you've decided that has to be in the song, if you can't support it on either side or underneath it or, you know, build upon it, don't be surprised when someone's like, hey, maybe let's try this first before you say, all right, print it, press it, let's go, distribute it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest thing, because, like, music of any genre is meant to inspire an emotional response, in my opinion. If that's the broadest general way I could possibly think. It's to induce an emotional response. You know, that's why those film scores that we talked about, you know, like with The Nightmare Before Christmas, or hell, even just stuff that you wouldn't even think about. When you hear, like, different scores for even, like, horror movies, you're talking, you know what I mean? Like, it's meant to induce that anxiety, that fear. But when you start to think about it from that aspect, like, you're taking it away from yourself and what you did and being like, what does this make me feel, or what do I feel like it would make other people feel? Like, what, like you just said, what's the intent behind it? What is the context of it?
Well, one of the best, I guess, analogy in this case is I was watching, it was a longer documentary. I think it was like 6 hours, so it took me about 2 days to get through it. But it was talking about all the different ways that film and movies, or, you know, TV shows and movies, illustrate what they want the audience to perceive.
Yeah.
So, like, the shading of a room, the colors in the room. Is it light outside but dark inside, or vice versa? You know, what setting are we putting the viewer in? And then to have a visual side of it, it also talks about the sounds. Is it ambiently quiet, like, you know, uncomfortable silence quiet? Or is it just a calm quiet? And if you've ever watched different horror movies, or you've listened to very, like, orchestral pieces, they use that tension of, is it a resolve and then a silence? Or is it a clash and there's a pot, you know, it's a build and then it just sucks everything out of the room and you're like, oh, I know it's about to smack me across the face in about 2 seconds. So it's like, you know, because one of my favorite pieces is Mars from The Planets.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I really like Mars, Venus, and Jupiter are my three favorite ones. That music perfectly illustrates what the listener is supposed to be feeling at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Is it over the top, big brass, big massive chords? Or is it very soft, where it's almost a piccolo or a flute or a clarinet or a bassoon that is kind of bringing you along in a journey? And if you don't have music that elicits some response, whether it be angry, happy, sad, whatever, it's going to be boring. No. I'm sorry. Like, if I listen to Hannah Montana for the 75th time, it doesn't make me want to go watch the Disney show. It makes me want to go punch the Migos.
You get the best of both worlds, okay? That's a Hannah Montana song, I believe.
No, I'm talking about the Migos.
I know.
Yeah.
But I wanted to talk about Hannah Montana, too.
God.
No.
Listen, if I ever want to see a butterball turkey twerk in my life, I will go buy it myself.
Listen, man, when you get to that level of, you know, fame and whatever, you just do what you want. I don't blame her. I'm here for it. I'm not, but she can be.
Well, you know, sometimes you want your music to be like a wrecking ball.
That's very true.
And sometimes, I don't know any other references.
No, but one of my favorite movies that I actually watched here recently was All Quiet on the Western Front. And that score in that movie, I don't know who scored it.
Beautiful.
Dude. Because, like, just that, because you can just feel the overwhelming fear that that main character has when he's fighting in those trenches, man.
Yeah.
Just, and it's, and nothing's even happening. It's just, there's nothing happening, but just that whole movie made me feel uncomfortable and anxiety ridden just because of that visual and musical aspect that combined together to make me elicit that feeling, you know, and it's did a great job with that movie.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they, there's certain movies where, you know, they'll win an award for a score.
Right.
And people are like, well, it's, you know, it's just the music. And I was like, if you take, if you really want to kind of blow your mind, take all ambient and music out of a movie and you will realize that it is about as fun as watching paint dry.
I was just about to say that. If you took the score out of any movie,
take it out of Star Wars,
anything, take it out of the late night sitcom that you watch at night.
Take it out of, you know, Alice in Wonderland.
Exactly.
Or what's that damn movie? Red Slippers.
Oh, Wizard of Oz.
Yeah. Take that out of the, you know.
Yeah.
Take the Pink Floyd album and throw it out the window and listen to the original score and you'll be like, wow, this is boring.
Well, you know, that's the thing. Well, actually, maybe not, because people listen to just conversations like podcasts, to idiots talking about stuff we don't really know what we're talking about. Because that's what it would be for a movie, right?
Do you want me to get John Williams?
I'm down.
Dun 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 dun.
But no, man, like that's a really interesting thing that I was kind of thinking about the other day with movies and stuff like that. Like how boring would it be just to have just the dialogue?
Well, I mean, and you also are experiencing something in a different medium.
Exactly.
Like, I mean, if you're listening to a podcast for music, little bit interesting because that's what songs are for. But,
sure.
But, I mean, overall, like, you have certain expectations of, like, whenever they, you know, eventually release 10, 11, 12 of Star Wars movies that everyone will absolutely hate because, mm-hmm. well, 7, 8, 9 sucked. So, but if you removed the iconic score, or let's say they changed it.
Even by a note.
It would be mayhem in the streets.
Oh, yeah. It'd be, yeah.
Because do you remember, do you ever play Battlefield, like, back in the day?
I occasionally did.
Like, but Battlefield 2?
I was more of a Warzone.
No, I'm talking, like, mid-2000s.
I'm sorry, Modern Warfare is what I was more into.
But do you know, like, the Battlefield theme?
Yeah,
old one. Mm-hmm. The very da-da-da-da-da.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, in Battlefield 3, they changed it, and they made it, like, super digital. And it's like if Skrillex got stabbed through the throat with a giant spike and you told him to keep making music, that's pretty much what would have been pulled out. And, you know, as fascinating of a visual that is, you know, it would definitely change Bangarang. But at the end of the day, like, they changed it so much that literally they immediately had to go, they changed it back.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. That's the thing. I think I'm trying to think of a way to bring it, because we kind of, I don't know how we got to movies and scoring. That's a good tangent. But,
well,
like,
I mean, music is so
involved
in just about every medium you.
Oh, absolutely. Consume. I'm not complaining. I'm pleasantly surprised, to be honest with you. But with the changing of things like what you were saying, I think that kind of gets back to what we were talking about earlier a little bit too, with the artists and the way that you don't want to stay stagnant as an artist. And if you want to put out, like, I love it when you hear the whole, like, oh, I wish they changed their sound, man. I wish they would have gone back to fucking album, whatever, whatever. And then they, let's say they put out an album that sounds like whatever, whatever. It's like, oh, they're just sounding like what they used to sound like.
Yeah, that. They're
it's
selling like, out to try to like, sell oh records. Oh,
my God, just shut up. And it's like, that's the biggest thing. That's what I've told all my students that I have. That's what I've told any musicians that I hang out with. Dude, it's just like, be yourself and do what you want, man. Because there's going to be a certain amount of people that no matter what you do, are going to fucking hate it. And just don't even pay attention to them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at the end of the day, anything that is put out for consumption is subject to review.
Absolutely.
It does not mean that that review needs to color every single opinion that you have about it. If you like it, even though other people don't, then good on you. You know, if you want a Doritos Locos Taco and everyone's telling you that it's trash, well, go ahead and enjoy your Doritos Locos Taco.
I did it one time.
And your 10,000 milligrams of salt.
Yeah, it was not good.
Yeah, no.
I was so excited about it, though.
I was like, you know, Taco Bell, nothing like mild sauce on tacos. That's just for the white people.
Well, it definitely is white people tacos. But, you know, anyway, I love white people tacos. No. Taco Bell especially. I'm just kidding. No, Taco Bell is like my one fast food that I will definitely don't throw down on. I'm not a big fast food guy. But
no, I had McDonald's for the first time in like a long time. When I tell you that it felt like I had the flu for like two, three days, and it wasn't like anything like disgusting or anything like that.
You just felt like shit.
But it literally felt like someone drugged me face first through the concrete while at the same time like grabbing my hair, but not in the way that I like.
Whoa.
Which for everyone listening is not at all.
No, that's not true. We need to start a Patreon for that up or that that kind of conversation. Got to pay for the spicy content. You know what I mean?
Got to pay for the spice. We're just mild sauce right now. Oh, we'll go El Diablo.
Yeah, we're going to get that El Diablo, that fire going on. No, it's funny, man, because once again, we're going to go on a tangent just for a minute on fast food. I don't ever eat fast food hardly at all, but when I do, it's fucking crazy, man. Just you feel like, you got just sucker punched for like a day or two. I
have a small tangent of that tangent.
Okay. We're just tangenting off the tangents.
Whoever is keeping Long John Silver's in business, you need to get shot. Just I'm so done with it. I was like, I passed one earlier and it was like, we have an Oreo cheesecake. And I was like, amazing. I'm so glad you finally have something appetizing on your menu.
Yeah.
I would rather eat the dumpster than eat Long John Silver's.
Well, I cannot remember the last time I had Long John Silver's. I want to say I had a family friend when I was growing up that was my dad's friend or something like that. And I was probably only 9 or 10. He loved Long John Silver's. Loved it. Anytime I went, you know, hung out with him, and he'd be, hey, man, we're going to get some food. I'm like, oh, shit. Knew exactly where we were going.
Yeah, nothing like fish.
Overly battered.
Over, you know.
Overcooked. Frozen.
The Rihanna of fish.
Dude, anyway, we need to get off fast food because this is going on a fucking tangent. I agree, Long John Silver's is disgusting. And the Whampoa Jacaris is the new Quan of high gain overdrives.
And if Long John Silver's wants to send us money,
I
won't need it, but I'll take it.
I will shill for Long John Silver's. How about that?
I will dress up like that guy.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. If you guys are listening and you see hear a Long John Silver's ad, you know what happened, okay? Let's talk about that for just a second, though.
The ad or Long John Silver's?
No. Like the paid sponsorships, right?
Oh.
So that's kind of what I think is hilarious. It's the equivalent of the selling out, like if you do like the album stuff, but in like the social media side of things, right? I've never understood that. These people that are in this business of YouTube or podcasting or whatever that have paid sponsorships, they're not selling out to anything. Those people are paying that individual or individuals to access their viewers or their listeners. They're not paying them to be like, hey, say we're good. Say we do this. It's like, dude, if I had Long John Silver's hit me up, I'm going to be like, I hate your fucking food. I don't want your money. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, and this video is going to be sponsored by Raycon and Raid Shadow Legends and Dollar Shave Club and Pfizer, because, you know, let's just make it controversial.
Right.
Also, if you want to go ahead and give a Dawn wash with Tide cleaning products and Gamble and Procter, and, you know, let's just go ahead and throw Yum, the corporation, Popeyes, KFC, Taco Bell, Arby's, you know, let's just go ahead and throw everything against the window and see what sticks.
The thing that I want to comment about that is most of those ads are not controlled by the creator.
Well, no. It's a sponsored slot that they give them a package to insert in the video.
Yeah, I'm talking about like guys that like have like affiliated links.
Yeah.
I'm talking about guys that are endorsed by X company that get stuff sent to them to review, sometimes has a check associated with said review.
Well, I mean, I think that those things are fine as long as, like, because I know Fluff did one for the Fender, the $1,500 Fender
Tone Master.
That's it. But he literally said in his review that this is a sponsored review.
Yeah.
This is not... You know, they sent me this. They are paying me to talk about this. My opinions are my own, but that needs to be clear. It's when people go, you know, I just really think that this one thing is so amazing and blah, 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 blah. But in reality, they're getting paid behind the, you know, under the table almost. And if you're going to market yourself to consumers, which
is exactly type what of, you're doing,
any type of distributable media is typically marketing to consumers.
That is exactly what you're doing.
You have to be honest, not only with yourself, but with your
honest with
your listeners and your watchers. That's when I have an issue is when someone doesn't disclose.
Sure.
I don't need numbers, but just disclose that this is a paid review.
Yeah.
Or put something up saying this is a paid review.
Well, the first social media thing that I got really into was TikTok because it was easy to grow on. It was easy to push stuff out. No big deal. And dude, I had a handful of people, man, they started hitting me up about the like Wampler and like, oh, it must be nice to be just have stuff sent to you. And I'm like, if by stuff sent to me,
I pay for it.
Me driving to the music store in Hopkinsville, Kentucky, or getting on Sweetwater or Reverb or the plethora of, you know, American Music Supply, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then paying full price for this pedal and then playing it and loving it and then talking about it on social media. I'm doing great.
Yeah.
With a paid sponsorship. No.
I'm pretty sure you're getting hosed in your paid sponsorship.
I know, right? That's what I'm saying. I'm doing a really shit job as far as getting paid for this.
I don't even get a 5% discount.
Dude, I'm telling you, man. And that's the thing. Like, but that's what I tried to explain to some of those people. And some people got it after a while, but some people didn't. And it's just like, dude, I love these pedals.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit if I get paid to talk about these, because guess what, I'm gonna talk about it anyway.
Yeah, and it's like I have a number of JHS pedals.
Yeah,
I love JHS pedals. You know, I never found the distortion pedal I liked from JHS.
Sure.
But I found my overdrives, my compressor, a couple of my courses, my vibrato. So I was happy with what I had, and I had no problem paying full price because if it is going to go to supporting a company that I enjoy their products and I enjoy the things I get from them when I pay my money for it, you know, I'm still waiting on my little Klon thing.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it's going to take time. I knew it was going to take time. When it gets here, it gets here.
Yeah.
Is what it is. But, you know, whenever they asked me or whenever it was brought up that, hey, this is going to take a while, I was like, well, take as long as you want within reason.
Sure.
Like, because I ordered it, I want it. I obviously want it because I ordered it. So when I get it, I get it.
Yeah. Well, and I'll be the first one to tell you, I don't really know a whole lot about this, but most people that do the paid review things, if they don't like the piece of gear, they're not going to take money and review it.
So, which unfortunately, it kind of sucks because he passed away a couple years ago, or actually more than that, but Total Biscuit.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Funny dude, very informative, was awesome person, right? Or at least in my opinion. If you have a different opinion, well, congratulations. But anyways.
Thank you for your opinion.
Thank you for your service of your opinion. Anyways.
Service my opinion.
But he had a massive fallout with a person that made, like, it's like Gary's Adventure or something like that.
I think I remember this. Yeah.
Yeah, it was some video game, and he got a Steam key, played the game, pointed out that it wasn't for him and that there were some severe flaws.
Yeah.
And the guy was trying to take him to court, getting his video banned, getting his video taken down, got a DMC or the copyright strike. And it's like, and he's like, eventually, like, all that stuff cleared up, but he still had a strike on his channel. And he was like, three strikes and they dump it. Your entire channel is gone. And he was like, you know, it doesn't make sense because all I did was critique the game. I put everything out that if you choose to send me a Steam key, I get to review this how I want. And I'm going to review it exactly how I perceive it.
Yeah.
Exactly how to consume it. That's how I'm going to talk about it. And it's like, you know, you have some people that go, okay. And it's like, it doesn't really matter what you do. You could be a guitar builder, a pedal maker, amp maker. You make cables. You make microphones. You make the little feet that are on the mic stand. Whatever you do.
I'm going to make little feet, actual feet looking things that you put on the end of mic stands.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I'm making my own website. It's going to be called Only Feet.
Hell yeah. Where do I sign up?
But, you know, you got me off sorry, my entire dude. Point. Sorry, dude. Jackass. I had to make this comment about Only Feet.
Hey, at least we got an episode title.
Yeah, Only Feet. Anyways, God, hate you. But if you reserve the right to review things as you see fit,
yeah.
Even if you get paid for it, it doesn't matter. You know, people have a right to know about your product.
Sure. And here's the thing. If you are going to be a type of person that is going to be reviewing, demoing, well, let's just keep this really specific for the music genre side of things, right? The gear side of the music genre. You're a YouTube gear reviewer, okay? You have to think about it in another reason why I think a lot of those guys and girls that do that don't take some of those paid sponsorships if they don't like a piece of gear is what are you kind of like, how are you going to like perceive yourself? Like, do you want to be that guy that's like, no, this sucks. No, this sucks. Next video. No, this sucks. It's like, dude, I don't want to be watching negative crap all day. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, if it's negative within reason and it's, you know, more of a almost consumer alert. But, sure. But, I mean, you also have to remember is that there are going to be versions of a pedal typically where they may have used this one set of switches. But then they switch the switches out because they realize that they were falling apart and they were crap. Yeah. So things change. Production changes, especially, you know, buying a SD1 from, what, the 90s to today. Those are going to operate relatively the same, but they are made with completely different parts at that point.
Well, I think, I can't remember exactly when it is, but if you get anything like Boss-wise, I want to say actually as early or as late as like 2016, they were still using through-hole parts.
Yeah.
But now it's all surface mount stuff.
Right.
Now, is it going to be a dramatic, like, you can put two side by side and be like, oh, this is definitely surface mount and this is definitely through hole. Absolutely not.
No.
The only reason I like those Boss pedals from that era is because if I want to mod them and take out some stuff or put some stuff in, it's a hell of a lot easier for through hole.
Well, I mean, that's a lot of, that's honestly how a lot of people got their start.
Yeah.
Modded boss pedals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's easy.
It's easy.
Yeah, it's super easy. That SD1 next to the analog one, man, I did I took out, I can't remember what the mod was, but all I did was take out two of its resistors, and it gave it more headroom. It doesn't sound like a DS1 anymore. It sounds great.
Yeah.
You know, well, DS1s don't sound, DS1s don't sound horrible, but now, it, like, in my mind, that DS1 sounds so much better.
And this is what we call professional backpedaling.
Yep, there you go. Hey, listen, man, I'm a masterated facilitator. I know how to talk, and I know how to get myself out of situations, okay? Ask my wife. She knows how to do it all the time.
Only feet.
Yeah, only feet. Brought to you by Only Feet. I think that's a good place to kind of cut it off for today, though. Talking about Only Feet and, you know, professional backpedaling.
Toes down, best website.
Toes down. The bad thing is, I know for a fact, if I type in Only Feet into Google right now,
oh God,
it's going to come up. There's going to be a website already.
You don't want to see it.
I don't want to see it.
It's going to be the hub immediately.
All right, that's a good place to cut it off. We're getting into some dangerous territory, and we don't have Patreon, and this is going to be marked explicit just because we say the F word in this anyway. We don't need to go any further deep down that explicit rabbit hole.
Yeah.
But appreciate it, guys. We'll see you next week on Man the Helm Podcast.